Welcome to the Bob Siegel Show podcast on the Cross Global Media Radio Network. Visit cgmradio.com/Bob to subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform.
So, you'd like to believe in God, but you wonder, with all this talk lately about Christians being unwilling to compromise, isn't compromise a good thing at times? Well, my friend, it depends on what kind of compromise we're talking about. If you're trying to get together with friends and family just to go out and you're deciding what to have for dinner, what restaurant to go to, most of them want Italian food, but you were in the mood for Outback Steakhouse, okay, that's not a hill to die for. So yes, that kind of compromise is fine. Go ahead and compromise. In fact, you should compromise in that situation. Quit being such a pill. Quit being so difficult. Doesn't matter. It's just dinner. However, when the government tries to tell us how to worship, whether or not we can meet at church at all, whether or not we could sing if we did meet at church, or when the free speech gets regulated on Facebook and other internet platforms, that's another story altogether. Today, I have two special guests who will be talking about the need to stop compromising. I will be bringing them on in just a few minutes. First, this just in, latest headline. Governor Gavin Newsom signs new executive order requiring masks for Zoom meeting participants. Okay, not really. Chill out. It was only satire, but I had you going for a moment, didn't I? For just a fleeting second, one fleeting second, you raised your eyebrows, stupid as it sounded. Oh, sure. Such an order would make zero sense because in most cases, people are actually alone in their home or alone in their office while they're on Zoom. Then again, it was only months ago that in various parts of our country, masks were required while driving, even if you were the only one in the car. Masks were required while taking a walk outdoors. That's still required in a lot of places. You remember that time a surfer was getting into trouble while being the only one on the beach, out on the water on his board, in fact. You remember church drive-in services forbidden. They're in their cars, but they were forbidden. I could go on and on. So yes, that headline was made up. No sense reporting your old pal Bob to the Facebook police. I know that many who follow my radio show also follow me on Facebook, and the monologue on the show and Facebook posts are often the same. I do, however, wish to show solidarity with friends who have been or will soon be in Facebook jail. Now, please know, my friends, that you are welcome to my get-out-of-jail-free card. Oh, wait. I spoke too quickly. Those cards have been confiscated by our governor. He uses them to hand out to real, honest-to-goodness criminals in real, true jails. Now, that last point, well, also offered tongue-in-cheek, is reasonably close to reality. Good thing I still said it with at least a modicum of parody. After all, the closer I come to genuine facts, the greater the risk of actually landing in Facebook jail. Yes, these days, Facebook thought police are everywhere, especially when doctors they don't approve of are being quoted. Maybe Facebook should just change its name to Face Mask. Well, my two guests today have each gotten in trouble with Facebook, which is exactly why I invited them to come on the program today. In my opinion, getting in trouble with Facebook these days is a badge of honor. But both men have had the more conventional honors for years, and both are familiar to our audience. We are privileged to have had them on before. Dr. Everett Piper is a retired university administrator, conservative commentator, and columnist for the Washington Times. He was president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University from August 2002 until his retirement in May of 2019. He is the author of several books, including Why I Am a Liberal and Other Conservative Ideas. He also wrote Not a Daycare, The Devastating Consequences of Abandoning Truth. Dr. Jim Garlow is renowned for his quality leadership as pastor of Skyline Church and courageous leadership at that same church for many, many years. He has written a whole host of books on church history, theology, and Christian living, including the bestseller Cracking the Da Vinci Code and a more recent book called Well-Versed, which is also the title of his current ministry, an extremely vibrant ministry. Well-Versed, the organization, has a mission that every single American needs to hear about. Their mission, in their own words, bringing principles of governance to government leaders, young adults, and you. Dr. Jim Garlow and Dr. Everett Piper, welcome back to our program.
Good to be with you, Bob.
Likewise, Bob. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, it's great to be with both of you. Let me start with Dr. Garlow, and please tell us your recent Facebook experience. I've been following it. I found it pretty fascinating. Nothing these days should surprise anybody, but maybe we can long for the days when this kind of garbage would have surprised us. Go ahead and tell us what happened with you recently on Facebook.
Well, first of all, thank you for what you do, Bob Siegel, and the leadership you give in our community. And then Everett Piper, who you, your other guest, has been a long-term friend of mine. In fact, I consider myself the president of the Everett Piper fan club. He's one of the great gifts to America. He and I have worked together on many projects. Yeah, I did a very simple thing. I asked a survey question, and I said, would you rather, on Facebook, would you rather have, number one, Dr. Fauci, who does not believe in hydroxychloroquine, take care of you if you got COVID, or would you have, number two, prefer to have Simone Gold, who does believe in HCQ? She's the doctor who, along with about a dozen other doctors, was in front at a press conference in front of the Supreme Court recently. And about 400 people voted immediately, and all of them chose number two, Simone Gold, using HCQ or hydroxychloroquine as opposed to Dr. Fauci. And they pulled that down immediately. They also had previously pulled down the video. I simply posted the video of the press conference at the Supreme Court of the doctors who were advocating taking hydroxychloroquine with zinc and azithromycin in the first 5 days of symptoms, which everybody knows who does any reading that that actually is having a great deal of success. I've interviewed a number of those doctors. Anyway, that got me in trouble. They pulled it down immediately. And I was not put technically in prison, like many of them in the jail, but they notified me if there was any more infraction, they would not only pull it down, but they would put me in the jail for the 24-hour span.
It was kind of a slap on the wrist and a warning this time, wasn't it?
Exactly. So I posted a picture of a meme of a Facebook police car and to put it on there as kind of a statement of my response to their attack on truth.
That's absolutely mind-boggling. I want to get into that with you, but I know that Everett's had some recent things. There's been more than one. I know the certain articles he's written for the Washington Times and other places have been censored by Facebook, and he has thousands of friends go and repost it. But tell us a little bit about what's been happening with you, Everett.
Well, again, thanks for having me on.
And, my pleasure.
You know, Jim keeps saying he's the president of the Everett Piper fan club, but he keeps sending me these bills for his services rendered. I don't understand.
I wanted to know if I get in on that fan club, do I get the decoder ring and the free egg roll for the first 6 months? I'd like to know what the deal is.
I may send him bills, but he's never paid one of them, I might point out.
Okay. I should have known better than to get into a sparring match with Dr. Garlow live radio. Anyway, I've been locked down on Facebook. And you know what? They never told me why. I just got a notice saying that I was locked down for a month. So your guess is as good as mine. You know, which article was it that I wrote? What commentary was it? What ideas were unacceptable to the great Mark Zuckerberg and his cronies? I don't know. The thing that I have the greatest issue with concerning the Facebook and the social media issues right now is, do you all know what Mark Zuckerberg's highest degree is? You two guys probably do. But for the listeners, I ask this rhetorical question.
Would it be called IT? Is there a degree called IT instead of BA?
he doesn't have a BA. Mark Zuckerberg's highest degree earned is a high school diploma. Now, I'm not disparaging those people listening that only have a high school diploma. My dad didn't even have that. My mom didn't even have that. And I hold my mom and dad in the highest regard. But my mom and dad had enough humility to not act like they should be censoring the world on medical issues. Mark Zuckerberg doesn't have any more education in medicine than you and I or anybody else listening to this show. Mark Zuckerberg has zero education in medicine. So what business is it of Mark Zuckerberg to be telling any of us what information we should be consuming when it comes to our own health care?
Well, and what's interesting is he always says this was checked by our fact checkers. First of all, the obvious question that comes up is who checks the fact checkers? But sometimes I go to the fact checkers and I read it, and it's really interesting because right across the top they'll write false, and then you start reading and they'll go, well, while this is technically true, they're not taking this into consideration. And so they actually admit sometimes that it's true while stamping the word false. And how many people even take the time to read what they actually said?
Well, when it comes to the COVID-19 story and hydroxychloroquine, like Jim Garlow just summarized, there's a lot of information out there from very well-respected medical professionals who suggest that hydroxychloroquine might have a positive effect in treating COVID-19. There is a Yale medical school professor who wrote a story in Newsweek, not a conservative bastion of political thought, I might add, but a Newsweek story came out in late July from a Yale medical school professor who said that hydroxychloroquine has a beneficial effect in treating COVID-19. I could go on and on and on. In fact, my last article for the Washington Times covered several medical doctors who are suggesting that it might have a positive effect. And therefore, why not let those people make the decision as to what information we should be consuming with regard to the treatment of this disease?
Well, they always come back with the term, oh, well, that was anecdotal. How do you respond when they throw out the word anecdotal as if that's supposed to stop the conversation? Jim Garlow, how would you respond to that term anecdotal?
Back on. I accidentally hit a mute button.
Oh, okay.
in my relationship with Everett Piper, he's wished he could hit a mute button many times for me. But
yeah. I thought Facebook was intervening in our conversation, and Facebook had muted you. I'm saying, how did they get into our radio studio?
I can't let this go. Garlow does that every time I talk. He hits the mute button. I just want everybody to know that.
Okay, so Garlow wasn't trying to mute himself. He was trying to mute Everett, and then it backfired. That's what happened. Okay.
Yes, you got it right. I was on a conference call with Vladimir Zelenko. He's a medical doctor in a Jewish community in New York City, 35,000 people in one square mile. He treated 2,400 people. One died. How was he so successful with 2,399 of them? The very thing we're talking about, HCQ with zinc and azithromycin, if administered in the first 5 days. After 6 days, not so much. Even the World Health Organization, when they slammed HCQ, admitted later, oh, by the way, that was a completely bogus study. Everybody knew it was a bogus study before they did by doing some basic research on who it was that told them that HCQ was bad. The president of the United States takes it prophylactically as well, not preventatively because he didn't have it, presumably, but he has been quite successful with it. That may be called anecdotal, and I understand that, but sometimes it's that these antidotes that help give you information that can save lives. How is it possible that Democratic governors, Democratic mayors, are so, and a guy like Mark Zuckerberg and others of their ilk are so opposed to lives being saved? This is not an academic question with me. It's personal. There's a doctor in the Midwest. I won't identify the state. My relative, and I won't identify the relative, works in a nursing home. People are dying. This relative came down sick. This relative has a comorbidity, and it had the potential being serious. This doctor got my relative on HCQ with zinc and azithromycin immediately, and within 4 days was out of it. That doctor is now being served notice of her violations for prescribing this particular drug. And she saved, and this doctor has saved the lives of a number of other people that I know of. What is it about people that makes them want people dead? Why would they object? Why wouldn't they say, if you want to try that, try it. I won't try it. I told her a simple solution would be, let's let all the Democrats who want the vaccine to take that and all the Trump supporters who want HCQ take that. Let's just resolve it that way.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense, which is why they're not going to do that. Here's a big elephant in the room question. Is it possible that if Trump had not spoken out in favor of hydroxychloroquine, that it would be fine? It seems like that became the politically incorrect remedy the moment he spoke. Just as COVID-19 is now the politically correct disease, we're not allowed to be concerned about anything else like cancer or heart disease. Nothing takes precedent. Seems like we now have a politically correct disease and an impolitically correct cure. What do you think?
It's more serious than that. I think it has to go to do with the enormous amount of expenses that going into the vaccine. It can cost about $1 billion to get something approved because it has to be proved not only effective, but it has to be proved safe in double-blind studies. Consequently, the costs are enormous. There are certain people that own a lot of patents, Fauci being one. Number of example people owning that. Trace the money. The Donald Trump embracement of HCQ is only a piece of the story. Follow the money. Trace who has the patents, who's investing the money, and who has a chance to make billions of dollars with a vaccine. There's your answer.
Very well stated. And I would submit it goes even deeper than that. And I'll submit this to Dr. Piper. We've talked about a lot of this last time you were on, Dr. Piper, that there's also this agenda underneath of using COVID as a Trojan horse to start taking our rights away. Could you speak to that?
Oh, I don't think there's any question right now. Just stop and think about it. If any of the three of us would have gone on radio 8 months ago and said, get ready, the entire Western world is going to be shut down. The economy is going to be shut down. People are going to be quarantined to their individual homes. There will be laws requiring you to not buy and sell, to not go to church, to wear a mask, et cetera, to not visit your grandma. All of these laws will be in place, and we're going to shut down the free world. People would have called us nuts. They would have called us right-wing nut jobs. But here we are. Here we are. And if you don't think our enemies are watching and taking note of how quickly the United States and the entire Western world was brought to its knees simply because there's an aggressive flu. And I am going to say it that way. There are 4 million citizens in Oklahoma. That's our population. Do you know how many people have been tested for COVID? 450,000. Do you know how many have tested positive? 25,000. Do you know how many people have died in Oklahoma as the result of COVID-19? 450. A population of 4 million, and we've had 450 deaths. And we've shut down the entire economy, the entire state, and we've taken away our constitutional rights, and the people of Oklahoma have basically bowed the knee and said, okay. Absolutely. If you don't think our enemies are watching this and taking note of how quickly we can be brought to our knees simply because we were afraid of the flu, then I've got a bridge to sell you in the desert.
And when they report it on the news, they talk about the new cases. They don't talk about the recoveries. They don't talk about the fact that many of the people are asymptomatic and that this disease essentially has a 99% recovery rate. We're shutting down our whole republic for a disease with a 99% recovery rate. Dr. Garl, I want to get you in on that, on how this is being used to take our republic down.
On March the 15th, we all went into lockdown. We weren't sure what we were dealing with. We trusted authorities. By the fifth week, we knew something was distinctly wrong. The evidence was coming in. By 8 weeks, we knew we were being manipulated totally. It was obvious by that time that about 15% or so of the population, either by age or by asthma condition or heart condition, would be very susceptible. The other about 85% of the population could have gone on just fine and handle it. In fact, most of them did exactly that. That would have been the time to make the shift to allow 85% of the people to move easily and about 15% of the people voluntarily. By my own age, I would fit in that category. And I would have happily said, yep, I'll set this one out and I'll wait. And the rest of you go ahead and do your thing. I'll come back out carefully. That would have been an easy decision to go forward with. But by that time, the early one, with the governor of Michigan, for example, was aware of the power that she could exercise. Then they saw how compliant Christians were, to the point where the first time in the history, 244 years, history of America, a governor said, you cannot sing, you cannot worship in a church. And when it went to the Supreme Court, the Nevada case, they said a casino can meet, but a church can't. And so a group of people, 3 days ago, a church group, moved into a casino to have their event there. The night before, hundreds had gathered. It was fine. But when the church group came to the casino for their event, they rented the facility, a cease and desist letter came and was delivered by the police department. Yesterday, Rob McCoy, pastor of Ventura County, California, got a restraining order and notified him he would be cited if he opened his church today, and the first 1,000 attenders would be cited. People drove from all over to attend that church as a statement of defiance against the despotic rule of Gavin Newsom, who is backed up by an oligarchy, five members of the Supreme Court, John Roberts included, that are in complete violation of the Constitution, the First Amendment.
Roberts is such a disappointment because in one of his earlier rulings, this is one, the one that went from California, not the one that went from Nevada, he was saying, well, this doesn't really forbid the exercise of religion. I'm saying, excuse me, the Establishment Clause does not give you the right to decide what we consider an exercising of our religion. That is something that the church decides. That is something that we get our talking points from the Bible from. Isn't that true?
Well, it's precisely. And we mistakenly assume that the Supreme Court is the law of the land. It's not. The Constitution is. Thomas Jefferson defied, actually threatened to dismiss the court. Abraham Lincoln actually defied the court. Congress could defund the court. We were taught we had three branches of government. That's true. We were taught we had three co-equal branches of government. That is not true. One of them has more power than the other. That's the legislative. They make law and they control the purse strings. It was never intended for the Supreme Court, unelected persons, to be an oligarchy of about five people, sometimes six, with Gorsuch dropping us off under the bus on the Bostock ruling recently. And so these five or sometimes six people selling us out. And just give a little bit, I don't mean to go in the weeds here, Bob, but in 1958, the Supreme Court ruled in a case, Comey versus Aaron, and then they validated a case from 1803, Marbury versus Madison, in which they tried to make the case that their rulings were the law of the land.
And you know, what's really ironic is Marbury versus Madison actually ruled in Jefferson's favor, but Jefferson still himself said he was concerned that the court had too much power. Dr. Piper, I wanted to get you to weigh in on some of these recent Supreme Court decisions, too, and respond to some of the things Pastor Garlow was saying regarding the fact that this was never the amount of power the court was intended to have in our Constitution.
Well, Jim is a consummate historian, so I'm not going to be pretend to one-up him on this one. So I'll just say something in support of what Dr. Garlow just said. As we all know, we've heard this language forever, separation of church and state. There's a wall of separation. Now, we all know that that is not in the Constitution, that's not in the Declaration of Independence, but that wall of separation was first referenced by Thomas Jefferson to a church, a Baptist church in Danbury, Connecticut, where he basically was telling a bunch of nervous Baptists, don't worry, there's a wall separating the state from the church. And he was very clear that that wall was to keep the state out of the church. It wasn't to keep the church out of culture and out of the state. The wall was there to protect the church from government overreach and government largesse. The wall was constructed to protect us from Big Brother. That's very clear in the Danbury letter. It's very clear. There may be a door, and let me make this point, and I'll be quiet. There may be a door in that wall. That door opens from the inside, where the church can unlock it, can open it, go into culture and do its good work, being salt to a rotting culture and light to a dark world, and then we can go back through the wall, through the door, and shut the door and lock it and keep the government out of our business. I think it's very clear that that's what Thomas Jefferson intended, and we need to make that very clear in our debate and in our public commentary, and when we step forward and tell the Supreme Court and other oligarchs, as Jim has rightfully labeled them, no, we will not comply. The church is essential. The church has never been non-essential. You know, when that word escaped the lips of Gavin Newsom and everyone else, that's the moment the church, and in unity, should have risen up and said, no, we will not comply. We are essential.
There are an awful lot of Christians who are not standing up. They're quoting verses such as Romans 13, obey the government. Of course, that's not the whole story. That's the Bible out of context. Dr. Garlow, could you speak to that?
Well, they don't cite Acts chapter 4 or 5 when Peter and John stood before the Sanhedrin and said, we will not be silent. There's 364,000 churches in America. 72% of them, by their own admission, don't give a whip about the Scripture. At least 100,000, that's 28%, who consider themselves, these are Bible-believing churches across America. Of those, according to George Barna, at most 15,000 of them have a biblical worldview. That is, they look through the lens of Scripture at every issue. 90% of pastors in America acknowledge that the Bible speaks to the cultural, biblical, and political issues of our day. But when asked in the same survey, have you or will you speak out, 90% of the pastors said, no, we won't. Now, on an encouragement note, I just came from a rally, just got home in the nick of time to take your call, from a rally, a big rally in downtown San Diego. It's being held in 43 different other states, as I understand it, 3 o'clock in the afternoon on Sunday. And a rallying saying, no more. We're not going to be silent. We're not going by these rules. You are in violation of Scripture, and you're in violation of the law of the United States of America. And so pastors are beginning to stand up. Some of us have been warning pastors for 40 years this day was coming, but it is here now. And if we go back to the Supreme Court for a moment, how did they pull out of the Supreme Court, out of their Constitution, rather, the killing of a baby? They had what they called a penumbra. That's what the people called it on the Supreme Court. That means a shadow. They pulled out of the shadow of the Constitution the right to kill a baby in the womb. They did the same thing on Obergefell on the issue of so-called same-sex marriage. The issue of separation of church and state, it was exactly as Everett outlined it. Until 1947, in the Everson case, they flipped it on its head. And instead of saying the state has no right to intrude its life into the life of the church, they flipped it the other way. The church could not be operating in the public arena. So we have to understand how to pray and act specifically as it relates to our own Supreme Court that has become a dangerous threat to us as a constitutional republic.
Yeah, it's a misunderstanding of the First Amendment. But I also believe that there's another big myth about the Constitution, which goes back to the Supreme Court again. And it's this idea that the Supreme Court is there to interpret the Constitution. Nowhere in the Constitution does it say that they're supposed to interpret it. Yes, they may look at some laws made in a state or a city that goes up to them to see if it complies with the Constitution. They're there to enforce the Constitution. But when I hear people tell me that the Constitution means whatever the Supreme Court says it means, I have just three words for them: Dred Scott decision.
Yeah.
Or precisely. And go ahead, Everett. Go ahead.
No, it's spot on. The Supreme Court has been wrong, correct? I mean, Dred Scott decision is the evidence that the Supreme Court has been wrong. So Bob's rhetorical point drives the point home that the Supreme Court is made up of fallible human beings and they can be wrong. How do we correct that? We rise up and we say, no, the Constitution does not give anyone the right to tell the church how to go about its business. No, we are essential. We will not comply. That's the way to correct government overreach, whether it's the Supreme Court, the executive branch, or the legislative branch. You rise up and say no.
And the ironic thing is, if enough people did that, the government would back down immediately, wouldn't they?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's why the Dred Scott decision was reversed. That's why Martin Luther King Jr. was successful. That's why we've had good decisions made by government, whether it's the Supreme Court or the other two branches. It's because they do, those human beings do read the news and they watch what's going on in the streets. When people rise up and say, no, this is not constitutional, if we went to jail by the thousands simply for being Christians, I believe that the public, as well as the legislative branch and the executive branch and the judicial branch, would pay attention to the fact that we are being obedient to God to the point of going to jail. And I want to respond with Romans 13 in that question. But you always have to obey the government. No. That is taking the Bible out of context. Context is always king. And if you believe that you always have to obey the government, that every Christian, every obedient follower of Christ must bow to the government because Romans 13 says so, then take the story of Exodus out of the Bible. Take the story of Moses out of the Bible. Take the story of Samson and Jephthah out of the Bible. Take the story of Esther out of the Bible. Take the story of Peter and Paul out of the Bible because they went to jail and they lost their heads and were crucified. Take the story of Jesus out of the Bible because all of these are examples of the patriarchs of our faith, the very Lord and Savior that we worship, standing up in the face of some government edicts because they were wrong and saying no. And by the way, human freedom is a biblical principle that should be fought for and preserved. Pharaoh, let my people go.
Well, not only that, but take the abolitionists out of our history. The abolitionists were speaking against what was the law of the land in the southern states when they spoke against slavery.
Everett and I have been a part of the Wesleyan Church. I've been a part of the Wesleyan denomination my whole life. The Wesleyan Church was founded as an act of rebellion against those who are advocating a rebellion against God's authority. By that I mean we were radical abolitionists founded in 1843 for the purpose. Our early churches of the Wesleyan denomination were a day's journey apart in the South so we could smuggle slaves out of the South into the North. In one county in South Carolina, there was an expression, we need this rope to hang another Wesleyan. They hung Mackenzie McPherson, a Wesleyan from Freedom's Hill Chapel, because they were helping to smuggle the slaves out of the South into the North to freedom. So Everett's point is precisely right, not only in biblical history, but throughout all of church history. In addition to that, those who use that Romans 13 line don't look at the context even further. It says the government is to be the diakonos of God. That's a Greek word for the minister of God. The government is appointed by God. God established government. He establishes nations. And it's to be the minister of God. Now, in a monarchy, we don't have much power to influence how a government functions. But in a constitutional republic that has democratic voting, it means we have enormous power and influence. We, the people, are the government. It's our job as we, the people, to be informed, to be registered, to be voting, to be articulate. This is not right versus left. It's right versus wrong. And because it's our job to make sure our government functions as the minister of God, according to Romans 13, which says its purpose is to protect the citizenry, which is precisely the opposite of what's happening in Portland, Minneapolis, New York, Atlanta, and many other cities. But they're led by liberal progressive Democrats who are in violation of what the scripture says the purpose of government is.
Well, not only that, but we know for a fact that when they claimed they were doing these shutdowns and lockdowns to keep us safe, they were lying through their teeth, because now they're telling the police to stand down. They want to defund the police. People are getting pulled out of their cars and beaten. People are getting murdered, mostly African-American people and toddlers. People are losing their businesses. Their buildings are being burnt to the crisp. And they're telling the police to stand down. And they're not saying anything about the social distancing of groups like Antifa when they're getting together. They're calling it a peaceful protest. They have zero credibility. Why should we ever listen to them again when they say, we're just here to keep you safe? During these last few months, the policemen were our friends. Sure, the governor's saying, listen to the policeman when he wants to arrest some lady that wants to reopen her salon in Texas. The policeman's just doing his job. Listen to the officer. He's our friend. But the minute those policemen want to do something like arrest real honest-to-goodness looters and hoods and criminals, all of a sudden they're told to stand down. Why should one person in the country be listening to these governors claiming that they're trying to keep us safe?
Well, they should.
You take that. You run with it.
They've proven their hypocrisy in all of the stories you just cited, Bob, and we could go on and on for another show, another two shows, three shows, citing the evidence that they really don't believe in the quarantine. Because if you're protesting or marching for the right thing, the politically correct thing, then we'll let you do it. You're not going to spread COVID if you're marching for that thing. But if you go to church, you're going to spread COVID. That makes no sense. Talk about being anecdotal. Those people that want to dismiss our arguments because we're being anecdotal, stop it. They just need to stop. We need to look at the evidence that's before our eyes, and this is being politicized. Medicine is being politicized. Freedom is being politicized. The right to march, the right to go to church, the right to practice your faith is being politicized. And I'm going to go back to what Dr. Garlow said earlier. The good news, there are some pastors that are finally waking up and recognizing that their religious freedom is at risk. And they're stepping forward and they're saying, no. John MacArthur is among those, and others are following his lead. May their tribe multiply a hundredfold, because that's the only solution.
From 1968 to 1972, we were under a very tumultuous time in our country, with many of the same type of thing we're witnessing now, a lot of bombings. What was different was Democrats and Republicans were united that law and order was the proper response. What is stunning this time, jolting, is that Democratic governors and mayors are telling police to stand out. Even when Michelle Malkin was attacked 3 weeks ago today, 2 weeks ago today, and was attacked at a pro-police rally, this articulate Asian woman in Denver, the governor or the mayor told the police to stand there as she and many others were being beaten at a pro-police rally. And when Ted Cruz this week, 3 days ago, Ted Cruz in that Senate hearing turned to his colleague and said, before you leave, she's walking out, I want to give you one more opportunity to say a statement about Antifa and its dangers and its violence and what it's doing on the streets. I want to give you a chance to correct yourself. And she simply uttered these words, I've spoken the issues, and she walked out. He could not get a Democrat senator to speak negatively about violence, looting, going on in the streets, and killings. BLM might stand for burning, looting mobs, and the Democrats refuse to condemn it, and that is what is different.
And yet the mainstream media is packaging this as peaceful rallies, and they're doing something very predictable. A lot of people predicted this when they refused to tell the police to be free to go in and make arrests, when they were instead ordering them to stand down, and Trump was asking them if they wanted any help from the federal government, the federal law enforcement. They were saying no. The hope was that Trump would eventually go in there. And now they're spinning this new narrative, again, very predictable. It was all peaceful until Trump and the feds got in. And gentlemen, my concern is that people are buying this, because this is what the mainstream media, this is what you hear on NBC, ABC, CBS, PBS, supposedly the trusted networks. They're getting away with this. We've got to get the truth out about what's going on.
Well, they are.
Well, don't be unduly concerned. Go ahead, Everett. Go ahead.
No, let me just make a couple points that they are buying it, and then I'll let you spin it. I'll let you add the positive, Jim, because I know you started by saying don't be overly concerned. Here's evidence that the church, and I use that as a broader church with a capital C, I suppose, is buying it. Two Christian colleges this week announced that they are going to start giving away a George Floyd scholarship. Two Christian colleges have announced a George Floyd scholarship. Bethel in Minneapolis, St. Paul, now has a George Floyd scholarship. And Eastern Nazarene University now has a George Floyd scholarship. Now, why do I have issue with that? George Floyd was a porn star. George Floyd was a violent felon. I am not arguing that the way he was treated in his arrest and how he died was justified. That has nothing to do with what I'm saying right now. But why in the world would a Christian college choose to name a scholarship after a porn star and a violent felon? Why not go find an honorable black person if you want to give away a scholarship? How about Thomas Sowell? How about honoring Booker T. Washington? How about honoring Martin Luther King Jr.? How about honoring some of the, Bodie Baucham? How about Virgil Walker? How about honoring some of these people? Armstrong Williams. I could go on and on and on. Why not honor some of these black leaders rather than a porn star and a violent felon at a Christian college?
Or a courageous woman like Candace Owens with all that she goes through.
There you go. There you go.
Go ahead, Jim. Go ahead and respond to that.
Well, I do think there's hardly a day that goes by that we don't see some evangelical pastor or Christian college president capitulate. It used to be always capitulating to LGBTQ and then the trans, and now it's to the virtue signaling, doing their little hashtags with BLM, not acknowledging that BLM is anti-Semitic, it's Marxist, it's advocating of transgenderism, homosexuality, and the list goes on.
Calls for an overthrow of our Constitution, calls for the defunding of the police. Yeah, the list goes on forever.
But bear in mind, as you look at the polling right now, as we're down to, what is it, 86 days or whatever we are from the election. There were 261 polls, Hillary versus Trump. In 245 of them, Hillary was winning. 16 said Trump would win. We have another dynamic going on that you men are both aware of. And I'll give this illustration. When we fought the battle to defend marriage, one man, one woman in California, we learned very quickly in studying the results from other states that there was a variance of up to 6% variance between what people said and how they voted in the privacy of the booth. In other words, that many people would say they were for same-sex marriage, sodomy. But when they got in the booth, that 6% swing was in favor of biblical, orthodox, historic marriage. They were afraid in polls to say the truth. We, on the day of the election here in 2008, we were exactly tied, dead heat in the polls, whether we could defend marriage. We knew we'd won it, and we won it by 4.6% that day. So what am I saying? There's probably roughly 4 or maybe 5% variance in the polls from reality. It's not, we're not talking margin of error stuff here now. We're not talking statistics. We're talking about people who are intimidated and bullied in the culture, and they won't. They're afraid to tell the truth to a person who's polling them over the phone that they're going to vote for Trump, and so they're going to vote for Biden to get by, so they don't have to put up with some heat for it. And yet, once they get into the voting booth, their eyes are open to the truth. And they don't have somebody intimidating or bullying them any longer. So be a little bit encouraged in the midst of this. We see the people who are being duped, but there's a broad swath of Americans who are coming to the awareness. We're in a crisis moment, and there's a reason why the platforms of the two parties are diametrically opposed to each other, and a follower of Jesus Christ cannot embrace the platform in one of those parties.
We're definitely in the battle for the soul of our nation. It seems that whether Trump wins or doesn't win, we may be on the brink of a civil war. I do have hope because I know that God is in control. But on that subject, I'm going to throw this out to each of you in turn. God being in control also reminds me to look at how God dealt with nations when they turned away from him. And I don't think he expects somebody who doesn't believe in the Bible to live by biblical morality. I mean, he wants them to do that. He wants them to get saved. But what I mean by that is that primarily he is holding the evangelical pastors accountable. I'm glad many are waking up. You two were among the first, so I commend you for your courage. I'm glad others are. Not nearly enough, in my opinion. And I'm a little bit concerned because, yeah, God's in control, but because he's in control, he will allow nations to have the leaders they deserve. On the other hand, he seems to have his hand on Trump, and I have no idea whether Trump's born again or not born again, but even if he's using him like a Cyrus or an Artaxerxes when the Jews were allowed to return to their homeland from Babylon, I believe he has his hand on Trump. So I believe God's in control, and yet when I look into the spiritual realm, when I take that peek, it seems a little uncertain what might happen. In turn, first Dr. Piper and then Dr. Garlow, I'd like to hear your comment on that.
I'm going to be brief because Pastor Garlow needs to respond to this because I know he has a great encouraging word. But let me tell you a story. It was during the what's the number for the proposition for a traditional marriage in California? What was that number?
Prop 8.
Okay. It was during the Prop 8 campaign Dr. Garlow was leading that charge. I knew he fought very, very hard, and I knew that he had good reason to be exhausted. The night after they won, I decided to call up Dr. Garlow, and I said, Jim, congratulations. You won. And I don't believe you would have in the state of California had it not be for your leadership. Thank the Lord for your leadership. Thank the Lord for what you did. Congratulations, you won. Jim responded to me. Dr. Garlow responded on the phone. He said, Everett, you don't know the half of it. The anger and the vitriol from the LGBT community. I've had to have guards at the church. I've even had to have guards at my house. It's just been exhausting. And then in standard Garlow-esque fashion, with perfect enunciation, like Jim is gifted in his delivery, he paused for a split second, and then he said to me on the phone, but Everett, what a wonderful time to be alive. And I'll never forget that lesson, because Jim has confidence in a sovereign God, and he recognizes that if we do our job, if we're obedient, and if we're faithful soldiers for the gospel of Jesus Christ, it is a wonderful time to be alive, because the battle lines are clear and God is very, very clear in what he's telling us to do. I'll never forget the lesson of Jim Garlow in 2008. What a wonderful time to be alive.
Okay, and Pastor Garlow, I hate to do this to you because we're coming toward the end of the program, but I want to go ahead and respond as well as you can.
I've had the privilege of being with the president 5 or 6 times, several times in the White House with small groups with the Faith Advisory Board or what it was, various names has been called through the years. Vice President Pence once in his presence at a dinner in the White House stood and said the president prayed to receive Christ as his Lord and Savior. This was a number of years ago. He was led in a sinner's prayer by Pastor Paul White. And I can say this with integrity. He really wants to do what is right. Now, putting that issue aside, you raised that question, a very valid question. We use the word civil war. I'm using a slightly different phrase. The incivility is so severe. We are in an uncivil war, and it is on. This is not pleasant. There's no way to make it sound pleasant and trivialize it in any way. It is serious, and it could cost some their lives, including any of us, for that matter. But God created us for this moment. This is our moment. He didn't put us here 100 or 1,000 years ago. He put us here for this moment, and we will stand and do everything within our power to exalt the word of the Lord and exalt the name of Jesus, even in the midst of an uncivil war.
Gentlemen, it was such an honor to have both of you. We could have done this easily for 3 hours. I hope you'll honor us by coming on again. Ladies and gentlemen, this is history in the making.
The Bob Siegel Show podcast is a production of Bob Siegel and Cross Global Media. Visit us online and subscribe to the show at cgmradio.com/Bob.